Throughout all of history, they've only talked about the fame, never the hard work, never the elbow grease, never the early call time.
So, welcome back to another riveting episode of Early Call Time.
Exciting.
Nadav is not with us because he's asleep, I think.
Yeah, I think he had to wake up at 2 o'clock this morning. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm getting out my notes.
We're with...
what you were doing over there. I'm like, what is that?
World-famous director Rosemary Rodriguez.
Nice.
Is our guest today. You're our first director on the show, actually.
Oh, I thought that's all you had on was directors.
No. We have writers, we have editors.
Who else have you had on? I want to know.
Well, we had Harry Jurgen. He was an editor for Revolution and Gossip Girl.
Nice.
And I worked with him on Gossip Girl. And then...
Eric Brown.
Eric Brown.
On Family Guy.
Yep.
Oh, that's a great show.
Which blew up.
Yeah. It was kind of
people
amazing.
Went nuts over that one.
We had
Oh, that's good.
Actress.
I mean, that's a great show.
Yeah.
So that's good. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we had a... Because we like to interview everyone in the entertainment industry. So we had...
Oh, you know what? I just saw... we just went to the taping of the McCarthys that Jack McGee is in.
Yeah.
And they're doing the show. It reminded me of Family Guy because they do a little like da-da-da-da, the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then they like stop. And then they go to like almost like a flashback of like something else that happened.
Really?
And then they go right back to the scene again.
Oh, but they're shooting it
that way.
So
it's like Family Guy. Yeah. Well, they shoot the flashback pieces separately
from the
live audience part. You know what
I mean? Oh, got it.
But it was totally Family Guy.
That's really
I was
cool.
like, that is so cool. Because it's hilarious. Even live, it's hilarious. Like, it's hilarious on Family Guy most of the time.
Right.
And it was really funny on the show. I thought it was a really good device. So anyway, just to throw that out there. A little plug for the McCarthys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we had a visual effects PA for Fury. The Brad Pitt film that's coming out.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, we were just trying to get... I mean, I would love to have somebody, like, in catering or, you know, interview a transpo guy and say, so what's it like being a transpo guy?
You should get all different kinds of people involved in...
Yeah.
I mean, that was one thing on the Emmys. It felt like a lot of people were thanking the crew, which doesn't usually happen. Everyone's too busy listing their agents off.
Yeah.
Whatever they think that's going to get them. But the crew is really, you know, important. And I was kind of impressed that, like, so many people... I don't know if you noticed that, but... did you notice?
I feel like I was
boycotting this year because I wasn't nominated, so I don't know.
Oh, so you didn't even watch the Emmys. Did you not watch the Emmys for real?
No, I watched parts of it.
I was working.
I do the highlights.
So. Oh, you guys. All right, go ahead.
I'll watch when you win.
No judgment. All right, fine. So,
well, I think that seems to be the trend, though. I think a lot of people are... I don't know if it's really a trend. Maybe it's just the people that are winning are being, I don't know, are humble?
Maybe the agents are just getting worse, so there's no reason to thank them.
Could be, yeah. That's very true. But from what I've talked to Andrew and with you directing for The Good Wife, the crew really loves you on the.
Oh, I love that show. I love that crew.
Show.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's
do you think that you being nice and cordial with the crew, do you think that you get more out of them? Not to say that, like, that's a bad thing, but like,
it's all in the plan.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's not. It's not. First of all, it's hard. Like, sometimes, like, even when you say that word nice, it's like, I don't want to really be thought of. It's weird, right? Like, you're a female director and then you're nice. It kind of feels like, oh,
kind of
that's
like
not like
gonna,
that's not going to get the next, you know, like, franchise movie. Someone who's nice. So sometimes as a director, I'm like, oh, I don't like that word. Not that you did anything wrong. I'm just saying that. I always like wonder about that. But yes, all I do really, I think it's really important. I've been through a lot of shit in my life. So, you know, I realized that you get to the other side and you're just grateful. You're just grateful when people are nice, when they work hard, when people do good jobs. Just say thank you.
Yeah.
And somehow just saying thank you makes a big difference for them, because I guess not enough people are saying thank you at the end of the day.
True. I mean,
they just leave.
It's a respect thing.
It's just a respect for people that are busting their ass, and, you know, everyone has to do it together. It's not, you know, making movies or making TV is not one person. It's a group of people that come together. And every time you get together to do something, even if it's one scene, one show, one movie, it's something that's never been done before. So it's not like, you know, you know, like we just went to see Mark Anthony on Friday night, and he was like stupendous. He's just like amazing. I mean, so amazing. But like you're sitting there and you're like, wow, he's been doing this for a long time. There's mm-hmm. so much ease to him with the combination of his talent, which is gigantic. I mean, he can sustain yeah. a note for like 5 fucking minutes. It's crazy. Wow. And he's got energy and he connects with the audience. He's so impressive. But it's like, but then you realize, wait, but he's been doing these songs for a long time. He's got right. band members around. They know the song. They go out there and they do it. They can be, but every time we go out to make, to shoot a scene, direct a scene or whatever, none of us has ever done that scene before.
Right.
So it's mm-hmm. you never really know right. what's going to happen. That's what's exciting about it, but that's also what gives it, what makes people tense, and it makes people afraid, and sometimes I think it you know, what makes people forget to say thank you, maybe. Because there's other things.
They have too many things going on.
Getting distracted, yeah.
Sure, that makes sense.
Yeah,
that
I think so.
Well, I mean, it's like practice makes perfect, you know? Like, a musician, they play songs thousands of times over their career, right. and that makes sense.
Right.
Do you notice, I know that you started out in New York, mm-hmm. and then do you notice the difference between working in New York and working here in terms of the people and
yeah,
just the
community?
Yeah,
one thing I notice is because, you know, I'm going to be nice on this show, but, you know, I curse a lot. It. And,
you can curse.
Use that word nice again. I hate that word. But like curse a lot. And in New York, it's no big deal because like everybody curses. But for some reason out here, it's always like a thing. Not a bad thing, but people right. always kind of joke or like, oh, say that F, drop the F bomb again. You know, like, it's like, what? Like, what are you talking about? That's the big difference. Other than
it's cursing.
That,
that's it.
That's just about the best, the only difference. Otherwise, everyone, work super hard, and they're really talented.
On
you know,
both
people
coasts.
People at the level of TV that I get to work in, they're really the best of the best. They're really amazing.
Yeah.
Amazingly talented people. So, and a lot of them out here, I say the other difference is out here, it's like fascinating because it's like generations of people. You know, yeah. like somebody's grandfather was a grip on like Gone with the Wind, and now, you know, mm-hmm. it's just like, wow, it's just the history out here, and,
yeah.
and it's like becomes, you know, what people do. To follow in there.
It's almost like
footsteps.
A family business in
yeah.
a way. Yeah, because I know people that their dads were DPs, and then they're like, well, I really wanted to get into acting. And then, you know, it's just like, just goes downhill.
It's kinda, yeah, no, it's really cool. But I mean, there's some of that in New York, but there's a lot more of that out here.
Yeah.
Do you notice that in other places? Like, because I know you've been like Vancouver and, yeah, I mean, because there's a lot of different places where, especially now, shows are shooting in all kinds of locations of it.
Yeah, I always notice it just harder in other places. So I don't... You're talking about as far as other...
Like going to Calgary when you did that for Hell on Wheels?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Calgary was great. The crew's great up there. But some places you go, it's really not... It's a stretch. If there's a lot of production going on...
Yeah.
They get thinned out. It can be really challenging.
Yeah.
Can you name all the names of the people?
Though.
Oh, okay.
No. I don't even want to dog the cities. I'm just saying I prefer to work in New York and L.A.
Sure,
I prefer to
sure.
work in this country.
Yeah?
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
So you don't want to go to, like, South Africa?
Or Mexico City.
Well, I just... I mean...
It's a lot of TV shooting.
If there's a content, a reason for the content to be somewhere, but if people are just, you know, trying to save money...
Yeah.
I don't think that's... Of course, they're trying to save money, but the what's gone on with the production incentives, the tax incentives here in California, thank God it's working out now because
yeah.
Governor Brown just passed that. I don't know if it's final yet, but the $330 million. So that's good. But for a lot of the past few years, it's really been
yeah.
a shame to have to go, you know, people go to Canada to
right.
save money instead of shooting stuff in California.
Yeah.
Or yeah. South Carolina or Atlanta or
yeah,
yeah anywhere.
Yeah. yeah.
Part of our show is like helping people who are either just starting out or have not started out yet and are thinking about coming to LA and kind of getting in this business. So we're going to talk about just sort of how you got your start and, you know, what made you want to do what you're doing and what they shouldn't do.
That's a lot of questions.
I know you like that.
I have some more if you want me to
no,
say
no,
those
that was
too.
A lot. Just starting.
You can break it down to the general.
Do you know
you
who
can
your,
do the bullet points.
Do you know who your audience is? I'm just curious.
14-year-old women.
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
No, you don't know, right? There's no way to really know.
Yeah, we really have no idea. But, I mean, I'm hoping that it's people that love TV and film.
Yeah, yeah.
For a start. I mean, they can be. You can be young and love TV and film.
No, I think it's cool to think about, like, helping people want to start. I wasn't thinking about that.
That's kind of that's been one of our that's why we had an intern on who's had been here all of 72 hours was, you know, like, what did you do to make that leap and come to LA and that kind of thing.
Oh, got you. That's
and
cool.
It's really, we want to see this more as like an educational podcast and more than, I don't know, more than comedy. I don't know, but we, you know, we,
it's hard since we're so funny.
I know. But
and then people see the pictures on the site and they're like, oh, it's like hosted by supermodels. I got it. And then they listen and they're like,
oh, these guys can tell us something that we don't know. Mm-hmm. But we want to try to be educational and educational and entertaining.
Well, I think the first thing, I just think that the first thing that helped me to get into this crazy business is just being a really hard worker. So I think, if somebody doesn't really want to work really hard, they kind of like feel like, well, I just want to, get a good paycheck for a lot of money, mm-hmm. and I want to go home at 5 o'clock, and hang out all night or whatever. I think that's like the wrong, and I do think that people like that. So I think you have to be willing to work super hard. I think that you don't have to go to college to be in this business. So what happens then is people end up interning I had to be willing to work for free. And it's kind of like what happens in this business, right or wrong, judgment in there. Cause maybe it's all really fucked up. I don't know, but people have to be willing to sort of, it's like school. It's like work is school. You know what I mean? Yeah. So you sort of volunteer to get your education, to learn what people's jobs are, to learn how to behave on set, to see what everybody's role is,
mm-hmm.
and whether that's starting as a PA and just, doing that, it depends. I just think that's what I did. I mean, I went to college. I graduated from college. I moved to New York. I went to NYU for the School of Continuing Education. I didn't want to go to grad school. So I just took this 2-semester thing where you just make 2 short films. Because mm-hmm. I just wanted to learn how to, edit, use a camera, all that stuff, and shoot and stuff. So I did that, and then I got out and I started working. And I just started working in a place that used to sell film stock. Mm-hmm. They call it raw mm-hmm. stock, and all kinds of like film leader and film cores and videotape, like just anything.
Which is kind of going out the door in a way.
Oh yeah,
which sucks.
So sucks. I can't. Actually, Nestor was just telling me that he was reading about, because Quentin Tarantino owns a theater here,
mm-hmm. the New Beverly,
right? It's and then he just got rid of the manager.
Yeah, he's like mm-hmm. putting a whole program together.
Yeah, this whole month has been off because of it.
Right, because the guy, ordered whatever the machine is called. I don't know mm-hmm. what you technically call it. I know I have my DCP in there, which is like this little crew drive, this little like hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're not going to be played in that theater.
Right.
Which is fine. I think that's really cool because I can't stand that my film lives on this little hard drive. But in any case, I think that's really cool that they're just going to show films.
Yeah.
I think it's like awesome. I completely support that. I think it's brilliant. And other really big directors that I know would probably just say that's pretentious. But that's, it's an art form. It's a complicated issue.
Yeah.
So all directors don't feel the same way.
True.
I had to, for financial reasons, not shoot film in this last movie. But anyway, so film stock and all kinds of dealing with selling things to independent filmmakers. So I was in an environment like that. And then there was another place across, that place was called Rafik. And then there was another place across the street called Film Video Arts. It used to be called Young Filmmakers, and they had equipment rentals and editing rooms. And so I started working there. And again, just worked really, really hard. Everywhere I went, I just really worked hard and was like really thirsty to like learn and get into it. And then started, became a supervisor there, and then left there and started freelancing and just shooting for them, you know, and then using the editing rooms, using the equipment. Like if I worked freelance for them, I could use the equipment for my own stuff. So just started doing my own stuff, you know, boyfriend in a band, following him around, you know, making little music videos, you know, that kind of, that kind of crap. But yeah, it was fun, kept me going.
But I mean, you would say working hard and doing your own material.
Absolutely. Well, you don't have any excuse now because there's so many means to make a movie. So everyone that really wants to make movies now, they can't whine about it anymore.
Right.
It's like, just go do it.
There's
Take your iPhone and go. Like, there's no excuses. But also, what I find fascinating is how people don't seem to be willing to really do their homework and study movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, some people don't even want to watch black and white movies.
Yeah, I know.
If you
isn't
say it's
weird?
Black and white, they're like, oh, I can't watch black.
Yeah,
it's
I don't get that.
Not only do they not want to watch foreign films, now they don't want to watch black and white films. And I'm like, well, you can't have an education and you really don't know. Like the art, if you want to call it an art, I think it's an art. The problem with the technology now is everyone thinks they're a photographer and everyone thinks they're a filmmaker and everyone thinks they can be a director. So now actors direct, like anyone thinks that. Mm-hmm. So I think that if you really want to get into something, you have to educate yourself one way or the other and put yourself in it like 1,000%. Like I live this still, like 24/7, this is all I do.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that you have to know film and you have to educate yourself in that aspect. Who are some of your biggest influences as a director?
Other than
Andrew.
Well, you made a great short, Andrew. I was very proud of you.
JJ produced
it.
You did
a great job. You guys did a great job.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, you know, what I've been listening to lately, who's one of my idols, is Robert Altman. And I've been listening in the car. I got, like, these, you know, CDs that I've been, like, a book about him, his interviews all put together. So it's, like, 5 or 6 CDs of him, his producers, actors, and all that. And he's like a huge influence, and John Cassavetes are probably the two biggest influences on me as a director.
That's great.
So I think you have to watch movies, and you just, you know, movies are a thing where you're influenced by other filmmakers, and it's okay, you know. Maybe it's stealing, maybe it's not, but you don't even know because you just have to soak all the stuff in because everyone has their own individual way of telling a story. But again, because nobody's ever told that story before, that way before.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't say that right. It may be a similar story, but it's not going to be told the same way by any one person.
Right. I mean, it's similar to like Shakespeare.
Right.
You know, there's 8 different kind of forms for Shakespeare's stories. Right. But they're all told in a different light.
Right, and that's the thing about directing and storytelling. So when you watch other people's movies, you may pick, oh, why does this shot work? Why did this work? You know, and one of the best things I ever did was take this class, and used to watch a film like twice.
Mm-hmm.
All the, you know, classic films, like whatever, Citizen Kane, those type of movies. But you'd watch it twice. You'd watch it once with no sound, whole movie with no sound, and then the second time you watch it with sound.
Right.
So the first time you're just getting the story through the lighting, the camera angles, the editing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're just seeing all of the layers that go into what you're watching. And that was really a great thing to do. So I always recommend that to anybody. And the other thing, you know, because I end up talking to a lot of classes and stuff like that. So, I mean, the one thing that I think, you know, I always say to anybody that wants to be a director in particular is that if there's anything else that you're passionate about or anything else that you could see yourself doing, you should do that.
Really?
Interesting.
Yeah, you should do that. You should not direct. Because you shouldn't be a director unless that's the only thing you can imagine yourself doing.
Well, that's good advice.
That's my opinion. It's too hard.
I'm fucked. I gotta go.
It's really well. This means you have other talents and skills. But no, I think you seem like you want to be a director. You seem like you are a director. So,
well, there you go.
Well, that wraps it up then.
You had a unique experience to be able to shadow Rosemary when you're on The Good One.
He flew to New York on his own dime, and that's what I'm talking about. Like just doing what he needs to do, and he came and hung out for a little bit of prep and a little bit of shooting.
Yeah,
got some awesome advice from Brooke Kennedy.
Nice.
Who said it's all about working with what you don't have.
Well, that's
good.
Which
I found interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a fun experience.
That's good.
Do you, I mean, that's the show that you've done the most. Is there kind of a, Do you feel that there's a particular reason for that other than they like having you? I mean, is there a certain connection with the cast and the crew, or is it just...
I think that... I just think it's Juliana. I think it's just a certain connection with the actors or something, or and the creator of the show. And I don't really know. I don't know why it's worked out that way. I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
I just know I have a good time and they have a good time.
What, 13, 14 episodes?
Yeah, something like that. 13, yeah. 12, 13.
We do have...
Yeah, speaking of good ones, we actually have our first listener questions that we can ask.
Someone from Australia...
Get out.
Whose name is Sybil, wrote us, and she had questions for you.
You're lucky enough to be the first one to answer the listener questions.
That's so cool. I love Sybil already, and I don't even know her.
I think she's your biggest fan.
Oh, my God.
She loves your episode. So if it's all right, I can ask you a couple of these questions.
Sybil from Australia.
Sybil from Australia.
I've never
Should I read this in an Australian accent?
Try it.
All right. No, I can't.
I hope you're not making fun of Sybil.
No, I love her.
Because I love her.
I love her.
Okay.
I think she's great.
Okay, good.
She says, can you describe the screen language you try to create when directing an episode of The Good Wife?
That depends on the script. Every script, you know, the first thing, like reading the script, and then there, I don't read it really for logistics, not the first pass. The first pass is just for the story and just images or something that jumps out at me. And usually I'll try to, because the DP, now there's two DPs, but Fred Murphy was the DP for the first couple seasons.
Right.
And Fred Murphy is a brilliant cinematic DP.
Hoosiers.
Amazing.
Oh, that's awesome.
October Sky, Autofocus, Dreamer, Mothman Prophecies. I mean, he's done
great,
some
great movies.
Great movies. Yeah. He's an artist. He's amazing. So I would, you know, he's on a pedestal to me. So I always would read the script and then try to think of a cinematic language for him, you know, to mm-hmm. communicate with him. And so usually that involves like us, you know, he reads it also and then trying to figure out a movie that we could sort of do. And the mm-hmm. other DP is Tim Guinness, and he's amazing too. So it's always trying to find the story and then figure out a theme for that or what movie. Or, you know, I remember like one was like The French Connection that we sort of like tried to have that influence on.
Do you have
there.
A lot of car chases?
Well, we had a lot of like Eli Gold was being followed.
Oh, okay.
So it wasn't car chases, but there's
people.
A lot of on foot like following in that movie as well. So we kind of like used, you know, I used that. And so we'll, you know, definitely find a movie or something and try to.
Well, I think that's cool. I mean, a lot of TV shows, they'll do like, even just the titles have some kind of movie resemblance.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's kind of neat in that aspect.
Well, if there's a courtroom stuff too, that sometimes if there's like a lot of courtroom versus like a little courtroom, mm-hmm. then try to, you know, find a good, you know, good courtroom drama to sort of look at that and try to tell the story that way. Or if there's one where there's a lot of sex, then it's like, you know, my favorite movie is like Unfaithful. And so I try to think about that and like, you know, shoot it certain ways. So, you know,
you don't ask the grips to like bring in their favorite porn. And
I haven't done that yet. Next time, though. I'll, that's a good tip, Andrew. Thanks.
Yeah, I know you're going back.
This is an educational show. You're right.
I don't know why I went with grips. I don't. It just seemed...
I think you know why you went with grips.
Comedic, yes.
Okay, next question from Sybil from Australia. Describe the process of editing an episode and how much say you get as the director over the final cut, which I don't know if it varies from show to show or if it's pretty
cut and dry.
The standard scene.
It's mostly a set schedule. Yeah, it's most in television. It's mostly set. So basically, they start cutting the show while you're shooting it. So by the time you're done, you get dailies to look at, and then, you know, the editor depends on you know what their schedule is and how backed up they are. Once I get the editor's cut, I usually start working the next day on it,
mm-hmm.
And that could be anywhere from 4 days to a week after shooting. And then once I have the editor's cut, DGA contract is 4 days of editing with the editor.
Mm-hmm.
So then I go and do that.
Do you prefer to be in with the editor or
always?
Okay.
Always.
See, I'm the same way. I prefer to have the director there because there's so much that you can show a director in 2 seconds that if you have to do it in a quick time and send it, and
it's terrible.
It takes too long.
Well, yeah, and they have in New York, they have this setup where it's sort of remote, you mm-hmm. know, so you can be with the editor and talk to the editor and stuff. But it's not. There's nothing like being in the room with somebody. And it's the last piece of collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
Is the editor and director. So I always go. And again, even it usually costs me money to go. So
right.
yeah.
I have
right.
to fly out and do what I need to do. But I want to always give the best episode. So
is it hard to kind of walk away after that point because you know that there are other people that are going to come in with their notes and.
Yeah, as much as I always want to let go, it's always hard, and then I watch it air, and then it's always really hard.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really get easier for some reason. I'd like to just let go and just know it's somebody else's, and it's their thing, and they'll do what they want, but it doesn't ever work that way. I don't know why, but
yeah
maybe in time or something. But
now, I know a lot of shows, not to take away from Sybil's questions.
No. But, we'll go back to Sybil.
Okay.
Okay, good. I don't want to leave Sybil.
But no. but a lot of times, shows for the editor's cut will be, 2, 3, 4, maybe even 10 minutes longer than...
Or longer.
Or long. I think our first episode this year was 15 over.
What show are you on?
I'm on Scorpion.
Oh, gotcha.
For CBS. And if you've seen the ads around. But what kind of... Like, where do you like to leave it? Do you like to leave it a little longer? Or do you try to... keep like
no I think minute, I try two, to turn in minutes. I try to turn in my director's cut. My ideal is like 3 minutes over.
Mm-hmm.
2 minutes is even better, but three sure. minutes makes them feel like they can still have room to do stuff.
Yeah,
but sometimes things are 12 minutes, 16 minutes over. I mean,
yeah,
a day and a half on the cutting room floor. And yeah. Sometimes it's if I have to take out scenes and stuff, I'll sometimes just put them at the end of mm-hmm. the episode, like leave a little black and throw them at the end.
Sure.
So they know what was cut. But that is very dependent on the show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. But Robert King is very involved in the editing. So
yeah,
he'll get it the way he wants it regardless.
Right. Right.
All right.
Well, what else does Sybil have to say?
You'll like this question because it has a cool... filmmaking artistic kind of word in it. She says you've directed some of the more bravura visual sequences.
Really?
Yes. Of The Good Wife, such as this is Sybil's a fan, such as Kalinda destroying Blake's car or Will's decision tree interrogation plan.
She knows.
Oh my god, I love her. I really do love her now.
How much of what we see as viewers was part of the script, and how much is left open to you to interpret as a director?
Well, that's the thing. I love Sybil. Okay, so
there you go, Sybil.
So here's the deal. Because there's this real problem right now, which is everyone thinks that television is a writer's medium. And
wait, isn't that what you told me?
It's bullshit, though.
Oh, so you were bullshitting me when you told me.
No, that's what people say. That's what people say. Yeah. That's what they call it. That's what it is.
Oh, okay.
But
in film is a director's medium.
That's what they say.
Yeah.
I mean, so it may have become that in everyone's psyche, in everyone's mind. But the fact is, it's not just like this, the script is a script. It's a piece of paper with black ink on it, right? That's what it is. So, as far as I know, the only people that bring that to life are the directors.
Right.
Okay? I mean,
yeah.
And I'm not doing what the writers do. What they do is brilliant. So I'm not taking away, but that's what they do. They give me something, and then I'm bringing it to life. So mm-hmm. we're taking a little object that's like flat, black ink, and then doing it. So that particular sequence was agony of Kalinda with Blake's car. I was very happy with it in the end. I think the editor did a great job with it. But what happened was I was really, really stuck.
Can we, to fill people in if they haven't seen it, she's like beating it with a bat, right?
She's in her car in a parking garage. She's in her car and she's waiting for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then so she gets out of her car with a baseball bat. She walks across, the parking garage to his car, takes it and smashes.
Right.
And then kisses the rearview mirror and then leaves. So, yes, Now, I have to plan that sequence, but I have to, of course, go over it with all the producers a bunch of times to, like, right. go over and over and over so that we're all on the same page. And then no one can see me rolling my eyes.
I was going to say, as she says, with an eye roll.
I know. I'm like, well, what the hell? But then... what happens on the day, so it all gets worked out, you know what I mean? Pre-approved, sure. if you want to say. But then on the day, what happens, I was really, really, really keen on, like, this particular shot when she gets out of the car, following her over to the car, and then her breaking the window.
Mm-hmm.
One shot, no cuts, just that, just steady cam, nice. Kind of being a sexy shot. So,
mm-hmm.
so in part of the planning, a couple days earlier, while we're shooting something else, you know, we had the stunt guy come, set up this car door with a window that sort of mimicked the same kind of car, or was supposed to. And Archie Punjabi, who's the actress, she was going to come and, like, smash it just to make sure she could do it and was comfortable mm-hmm. and all that.
That's fun.
So we did yeah. that. It worked out really well. But on the day, the window wouldn't break. It
oh,
wouldn't
no.
break. It wouldn't break. No matter what we did, the window wouldn't break. It was like the safety glass from hell that, like, the window wouldn't break.
Was it tinted?
So it was like horrible. It was like, I was so worked up. So anyway, we ended up having to drop a scene in the garage that I couldn't shoot because we just took so much time trying to make it work.
Yeah.
And eventually we had to do it in cuts.
Oh,
the
gotcha.
Smashing.
Right.
You know, she picks up. And I was just super disappointed
yeah.
because the whole point to me was, look, maybe nobody would have noticed but me and Sybil,
mm-hmm.
but it's like, you know, you go and you have this woman with a bat and then she's badass kick ass. That's,
right.
She's doing it herself. But it didn't work out that way. So we did it in cuts. It's one of my favorite little sequences too. That's why I think it's cool that she said that. And it worked out really well.
But with the use of editing, you were able to pull off what you needed to pull off.
Yeah, and the editor, you know, found the right song for it, the right music,
oh,
which
awesome.
Really helped a lot. And
yeah.
so, yeah, this is one of those really great sequences that was agony to shoot.
Do you find that, do you like to put in your own music for your cuts?
Like, yeah, definitely.
Like, for example, I used to work on The Carrie Diaries, and there was a director that came in. She was adamant about using one song because it was really adamant about in her life. Like, it was
yeah.
very important in her life to make this scene. And I just thought it was another way of putting yourself into the art.
You have to put the music that you want in. Because even if they can't afford it, at least you're telling them what the tone of the scene is.
Right.
Right.
So you have to.
That makes sense.
I mean, I have to. I don't say you. I mean, I have
well,
no,
to
do no,
that. But it may, hearing it, that makes
yeah.
more sense now than, like, well, from a financial aspect, I know we can't afford this.
Right.
But because I want to use AC/DC's Thunderstruck because this is how it makes me feel.
Exactly. You're
you
just
know.
Setting the tone because
yeah.
they're going to put the music they can afford in there. But
right.
when you're reading a script, you sometimes have, you know, oh, this song would be great for this sequence. Or
not really.
No?
No, not really. Unless it's, maybe if it's a montage,
mm-hmm.
I start to have some ideas. But, you know, I'm a sucker for those, like, you know, ending like shows with montages.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Yeah.
When it's the right song and
yeah.
the right images, I think it's really cool. I never get tired of
just
that.
Just makes you feel good inside.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Or really sad
yeah.
or whatever it is. It's a device that I think is cool, but it's not overdone, I don't think. Do you think
no.
it's overdone?
I don't think so.
No?
I like them too. I mean,
I like them.
I know it sounds weird, but like the CW
mm-hmm.
is like notorious for that, and it just ties everything together really nicely.
Oh, I think I like it because there's no, it's just visual.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And I mean that's I don't know. I like that. I'm the same way.
Yeah,
I like it too.
I never get tired of them.
No. Does Sybil have more questions?
I have two more questions
oh,
from
yeah.
Sybil. One of these.
Oh, and Will's decision tree was awesome too. I just want to thank her for that, for
yeah.
noting that, because that was all great.
She loves
nice.
That. This is another decision tree question. This
oh, wow.
one might throw you off and cause you to quit directing entirely, but
okay.
we'll see. She says, I noticed in the decision tree that the inserts of the hand doing the writing were a right hand.
Love
whereas,
her.
Whereas Will is a lefty.
That's right.
What was the thinking behind choosing the scene to shoot the scene that way?
I didn't shoot the inserts.
Oh, boom.
And she, it's very astute of her, because I'm going to tell you that That was something that was, again, discussed a million times. What happens is because when you're writing, if you're so he's left-handed, right? Or he's right-handed. I don't
remember. She says he's a lefty, and I think Sybil would know.
Right. No, he probably is a lefty. Because he's right. We shot him writing.
Okay.
Then the inserts, they did use a different hand.
Okay.
So...
Oh, wait, what?
Instead of, like, flopping the image.
Because
well,
when
you...
Yeah, no.
You can't.
Because... No, because...
The writing's all backwards. Yeah, he's good.
Because you wouldn't see the... Okay, this was their thinking, was that nobody's going to notice.
Mm-hmm.
People, you know, obviously some people did notice.
In Australia, they notice.
But it has to do with when you're writing, you're covering the words, you're not covering the words. It was just the showrunner's choice to do that insert.
So did they know
way.
That it was...
They knew it was... Yes, they knew it was incorrect.
Interesting.
They just wanted to see the words better.
Okay.
And if he were writing as a left-handed person, you start covering the words with your left hand. As you're going across the page, you cover the words. So that's why they made him right-handed.
Oh, interesting.
It. Yeah, so that wasn't even his hand, Sybil. So.
Huh.
Don't worry,
but that
Sybil,
is really observant.
Okay.
I think Sybil should be a director and is going to have a kick-ass career.
Move to LA.
We'll fight Australia and have her on.
Yeah.
One more question from her. She says, can you describe the process of evolution involved in doing flashbacks on The Good Wife from more conventional ones seen in the blue ribbon panel to the memory pops you did in The Decision Tree?
I can't believe this woman.
She knows your career.
Dude, but she knows all the like things that are like the highlights of like what the show is. That's so bizarre. So the first set of flashbacks that I had, but she's right, it was Blue Ribbon Panel.
It's a great episode with Matthew Perry.
Yes, with Matthew Perry, who's awesome. So... I remember like getting the script, and I guess the Robert King was like,
"Who's the showrunner?"
He's a showrunner, and he said, "You know, we got flashbacks in here, and we did them once before, and we hate flashbacks." So as a director, I'm like, "Oh, great!
Yeah.
Like I get the flashbacks, awesome." So these flashbacks, of course, then had many meetings involved. This was an example of Fred and I, the DP, just sort of saying, okay, let's just figure out what we're going to do. We talked about it. And then Tree of Life was like, had been out or sometime around that or before, mm-hmm. whatever. Anyway, I, you know, it was supposed to be like 5 years earlier or something like that. I can't remember the timeline now, but the flashbacks were definitely Chris Noth, Julianne, like everyone had to look much younger and much different. So it was kind of like, all right, I think that I'm just going to keep everything just very naturalistic and very wide. And Fred was like, well, Tree of Life, we'll shoot it like that, just natural light. And I'm like, I'm not going to do close-ups because a lot of the show is close-ups.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I'm not going to shoot close-ups. I'm going to keep it like, so it looks like a snapshot. Everything is kind of wide and like a snapshot, and we'll do it like that. And it worked out really well. I mean, they ended up really good. They really liked it. And then I got more flashbacks in the future episodes. But this past season... was awesome. It's like one of my favorite episodes, and of course the name of it is escaping me, but it's it was one where they're so smart, the Kings. They went back from the pilot. In the pilot, she's on stage, she goes out with her husband who's been, you know, like dethroned, if you want to say, whatever. And so the next scene is her at the law firm. She's like running in for an interview or something. And so or she'd been hired. And so the episode that I did was, I think it was episode 521 was the number. Basically, it examined that window of time between within the pilot of like what happened to her between like being on stage with all the press, like flashing bulbs and like slapping her husband in the face to working at the law firm. Like how did go from that to that? And so they revisited that, and so, of course, we had a lot of flashbacks.
Right.
But Juliana was so amazing, and it was so well-written, and it was just great. So now I feel comfortable with the flashbacks there, because we know how to do them, and they're really great storytellers. So they're not cheesy flashbacks. They give you opportunities to actually... That particular episode became more about playing with memory and how people remember things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I had, like... It got confusing shooting. It was very difficult, because... the script was like really long, and it was one perspective was like, you know, Josh, like Will's perspective of what happened, And then it was Juliana's, Alicia's perspective of what happened. And they had different perspectives of it.
Even the dress was different.
So it was like playing with memory. And that was like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But it was really challenging shooting. I got to tell you, really challenging. Because it was but it was had to be done differently. And then everything is intercutting. And
I was just thinking about like even costumes and stuff. Like they had to be dressed differently because they remembered something differently.
Yeah.
So that was a fun day for the script supervisor.
It gets confusing. Well, also because I'm trying to create the tone of like and track the emotional moments. Of course, you know, you shoot everything out of sequence all the time. So it wasn't easy. But at the end of the day, I love Sybil.
I think Sybil loves you.
I can't believe
she's going to come to America and sleep on your couch.
That's amazing.
Can Andrew from Tarzana has a quick question, which is me. Yeah, that's me.
Isn't that you?
I think JJ has the same question, which is...
Oh, no. What is it?
What was it like directing Michael J. Fox?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he's amazing. He's inspiring. He's such a beautiful human being, inspiring, great actor. And he, you know, it's difficult for him. It's a challenge for him. But he puts in like 150%. And he is such a professional. And he is just so, you know... He just wants to make sure, like, he checks in with me to make sure I got what I wanted.
That's awesome.
Nice.
Which is incredible. And he doesn't want, like, special, like, he's like, just make sure you get what you want kind of thing,
you know?
Really, and then he'll
cool.
check in with me, like, did you get what you want? And I'm like, yes, my God, I did.
That's so cool.
It's amazing.
I mean, just to be able to work with an actor that isn't a diva in any fashion. I don't know, what's the male equivalent
Devo?
To a Devo?
Devo? I don't know.
A prick?
Yeah, there you go.
That's what I call
yeah,
him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, as a director, you have to work with these people a lot longer than just what's on camera.
Oh, yeah.
So someone that has a nice personality and is willing to work with you,
I'm sure
it goes a long way.
Oh, it goes a long way, yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
Do you want to chat a little bit about Silver Skies real quick? I know we're running short on time, but
sure.
I know that you love doing movies as well, and so you just finished one.
Yeah, I just finished one. We just had the cast and crew screening last Saturday. You were there.
I was.
Why weren't you there? You were busy.
I don't know. I don't know if I got an invite.
I was leaving the house, and I was like, I'm going, and he's like, I don't want to go to that.
It was awesome. It was at the New Art Theater on Santa Monica, which is an amazing theater.
Yeah, it was great.
It was a great theater.
Really nice.
The guy who manages the theater, Jim Nicola, I don't know if I'm saying his name right, but he was amazing, like so supportive of this little cast and crew screening.
Yeah.
And I just told people to come and bring anybody. So I just, you know.
I can't remember where I was. That's my memory.
You would have loved it. It was just amazing.
Well, I really loved the script.
JJ,
yeah, you would have loved
that screaming.
I know.
Flipped over it.
Yeah. I wasn't thinking until you came, like, where were you? Cause anyway, it doesn't matter. I didn't extend myself personally to you.
Oh,
but
no, it's okay.
I told everyone to bring people, and that's what they did. Everyone brought like a bunch of people with them.
That's fun.
Which was
that's
like fun. Really cool because it showed how much support. Like, people actually obviously had a good time making the movie. Otherwise, they wouldn't have all brought people with them.
Yeah.
You know, like family members and friends and girlfriends. And
yeah.
I was like shocked. So the theater holds like 300 people, and there was, I don't know, maybe 20 seats empty, 30 seats at most. I mean,
I was expecting this tiny little like art house type theater, black box sort of. This is like a full on.
It was amazing.
Like a movie
That's
theater.
So, cool.
So it's really affirmative. Yeah. I'm really excited to get this movie out there. We're looking for a sales agent, producer's rep, someone to help us sell this movie. It's very outside the box. It's called Silver Skies. It's about an over 55 apartment complex. It's being turned into condominiums. And, you know, what are the residents going to do? So basically in the first scene, they find out that where they're losing the place that they live, their home. And so they either have to pay or, you know, come up with money to buy their apartment or get out. And they're all working class people, so they don't have the money. So they got to figure out what the hell they're going to do. And, you know, I'm very fortunate to work with some really amazing actors that I think have been, you know, some of them done the best work of their lives. It's just incredible. Like George Hamilton and Barbara Bain and Jack McGee and Marriott Hartley and Howard Hessman and Jack Betts. And Valerie Perrine, like amazing. Alex Rocco.
Who was the incredible Frank Sinatra type?
Dean Martin. It was Dean Martin, type.
Yeah.
It was George Hamilton.
Oh, wow.
It was amazing.
That's
everybody
awesome.
That I've told, like I'll tell so friends cool. of my parents and stuff about the movie, and they're like, does he still have that tan? Like, that's the question everybody yes. asks me.
Yes. Well, you know why he says he has a tan? Because he was told when he came out here to Hollywood, he was told that if you stay tan, you won't have to have makeup on your face. And
because you can't find the
Silver Skies,
shade.
He doesn't need makeup, and he doesn't have anybody do makeup for him.
Wow.
Really?
He doesn't need to.
So that's all natural.
Yeah, he doesn't need to.
That's some pretty good advice, actually.
I know, it's kind of cool.
I'm going to the salon after this.
Well, if you're an actor, you always got people all over you all the time,
sure.
you know? But, yeah, so I don't know, that was a little inside thing. But he's amazing. He plays a character who goes in, and he has Alzheimer's. But he's in that transitional phase, so sometimes he's present in himself as the character of Phil, and then other times he thinks he's Dean Martin, because he used to be a gopher for Dean Martin, so he thinks he's Dean Martin. Then other times he gets confused and overwhelmed, and he doesn't know where he is. So it's kind of three levels of his character that
awesome.
he just transitions in and out. I mean, he's amazing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was fantastic. Everybody was fantastic.
Okay, just want to make sure your enthusiasm no, is like there, dude.
That's, it was
that's,
okay.
That's him. That's just him.
No, it was great.
No, in fact, the person I brought with me to the screening, her grandmother had Alzheimer's, and when we left the movie, I was talking about it, like, what did you like? What did you think was, you know, what did you think of the movie? And she started to cry because of that performance. Like, reminded her of, you know, her grandmother. So...
That's good.
I was like, sweet. That's
no,
what
that's
we wanted.
Really good.
We want people
yeah.
to cry.
Well, I mean, what I love about the movie, it's definitely, you know, it's a feel-good movie.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you feel
it
good
is.
At the end of it, but...
Your tagline or whatever, the log line?
Yeah. Shit still happens.
Oh,
yeah.
Amazing.
Oh, I'm so glad you liked that.
I was
that.
Laughing so hard when I read
that.
I was like, there's no way I could have come up with anything better.
Well, that's good. I'm glad.
So, I'm glad I didn't even send my
right
suggestions
to the point.
In. Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's just, but there's, in spite of the fact that there's a lot of comedic moments and that it's a feel good movie, there's a lot of moments that are real.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, you know, that film to me is like a Robert Altman movie. Not that I could be as good as him, but that's sort of, you know, the tonally, that's mm-hmm. where I tried to go with like just creating real life, which can be funny. But, you know, at the end of the day, everyone's going to leave the theater feeling good, I think.
And you wrote it, what did you say, 12 years ago, something like
12
that?
12 years ago, yeah.
So stick with it is the...
Stick with it.
...thing to
it's
do.
It's exhausting.
Oh, my God. Yeah, but you were so excited to do your own thing, and you went out, you just made it happen.
Had to do it, man. Shot it in 17 days.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know, it's crazy. Nobody, I've never been the kind of person, I don't know why... And maybe this will change after this movie. I'm just not the kind of person that gets handed stuff. You know, I always feel like I got to bust my ass and hustle for it. And maybe nobody gets handed stuff. Maybe that's just an illusion that some people do. But, you know, I think there are some, again, talking about generations of filmmakers, I think some people are on a path that the doors are a little bit cracked open. But I feel like, you know, it's challenging. So that's the other thing. If you want to, you know, get into this business, that's why I say you have to want to do it above anything else, because it's really hard. It's hard. It's heartbreaking. It is no joke, you know, and if you really want to do it, you have to never give up, no matter what.
All right. I won't. I'll stick around.
That's wonderful advice. I mean, coming from you, I mean, your first movie was really monumental. I mean, because you won a Sundance Award.
Well, we were nominated for the Independent Spirit Awards. It was a great. It got me into directing.
Yeah, I mean that's
or it gave me the affirmation of like, yeah, you're a director.
That's why I meant that was
that's monumental in my life for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Anybody that. I don't know. There's hard work that pays off, and I think that's having an award and being shown like you can do it,
mm-hmm.
not just to yourself, but from other people saying, "Yeah, you did a wonderful job."
Mm-hmm.
It just makes it easier to go out and do more of what you want to do. I don't know. In my opinion, if I were to be given an award, like
well,
that.
Well, it doesn't work that way. It hasn't worked that way for me because maybe I'm damaged. I don't know. But for me, it was always a question of feeling confident enough. And so getting accolades for things, there's an illusion that that's what builds you up.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if that really builds me up as much as makes me question that I'm worth that. So for me, because I'm kind of damaged, it has the opposite effect where I'm like, oh, no, I don't deserve that. So then I retreat into a hole and yeah. I can't connect. Becoming a director and like keep on and being persistent, no matter how you feel or what rejection comes, that's what's really served me. So now I think that like having the cast crew screening, I can mm-hmm. notice the difference between this movie and that and way back 12 years ago or 14 years ago is because, well, 13 years ago, actually, 13 years, is because it took me a few days though from the cast crew screening, but I actually took in that people really liked the movie. Yeah. I couldn't take it in for the whole weekend. I was just like, I didn't have any meaning for me. But then, so I'm like, oh, I've grown as a person because now I actually take in that people are, because when you don't feel it inside, it doesn't really matter. That's why people can be really successful and famous and blow their heads off because it doesn't have anything to do with money or success. It has to be inside, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was a little too deep.
I liked it.
No, that's good. That's good. That's what our show needs. More deepness.
Good. More deepness.
Yeah.
And more civil.
More depth.
Yeah. Well, yeah. What can we say? More simple. Well,
thanks for asking me.
Yeah, thank you for being on the show. It's been a pleasure. Maybe we could do this again. Maybe
I'm around.
After your movie's out in the theaters.
Especially you come to my production office here. Yeah. I'm down.
No I know. Problem. We love it.
Yeah, after nice the movie opens, definitely. Yeah. We'll definitely do that.
Awesome.
All right.
Well, thanks again.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
And that's a wrap. Didn't get your fill at Craft Services and you want more? Check out earlycalltime.com for more podcasts and information pertaining to the ever-growing entertainment industry. And remember to tell your friends about us via Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.